Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The game, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic, Elijah Campbell here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got some breaking news from Adam Schefter in the NFL. Quote, this offseason, the Packers offered Aaron Rodgers a two-year contract extension that would have tied him to Green Bay for five more seasons and made him the highest-paid quarterback and player in football. Rodgers declined the offer, proof that it's not about the money. So Aaron Rodgers apparently offered a gigantic contract extension this offseason by Green Bay and declined from the Green Bay Packers. I got to tell you, Joe, that makes my prediction of him being the starting quarterback for the Green Bay Packers in week one makes me feel pretty bad about it.
Jordan Love time?
Oh, boy. Maybe so.
There's some excitement.
Is there?
Well, maybe not.
Where's that at?
Well, I saw Tyler Dunn wrote a piece the other day. Tyler Dunn does a great job covering the NFL. He actually, where the heck was he? I think he was at Bleach Report before he started his own site called Go Long. And he wrote why Jordan Love, it's time. He's ready. People are missing the story, which is that Jordan Love is ready.
Maybe he is.
Maybe you're in for a beautiful awakening this
could
fall.
Be. Hey, if it has to happen, I guess it has to happen at that point. We'll see what happens with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. Speaking of the National Football League, Joe, we've spent a lot of time over the last couple of weeks reacting to some lists that ESPN.com has thrown out there, whether it was the top 10 quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, whatever position you want to throw out there. And they have come out with another list, and the exercise from ESPN.com this time around is a panel of experts coming out with power rankings for the next 3 years. So projecting all 32 teams for the next three seasons in the National Football League. Jeremy Fowler, Lewis Riddick, Seth Walder, and Field Yates are a part of this. They rate each team's quarterback situation, remaining roster after the quarterback, drafting ability, front office, and coaching staff using this scale. So those are really the criteria that they're kind of throwing out there to determine the power rankings for the next 3 years in the NFL. At number one, I don't think it's anybody's surprise, the Kansas City Chiefs. At number two, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the next 3 years, which it's interesting. Is Brady going to be there for 3 years?
He's just going to live forever.
He's just going to be there the whole time. At number three, the Baltimore Ravens at number three on the power rankings for the next 3 years. Buffalo coming in at number four. Cleveland at five. So a lot of AFC teams so far on this list.
Yeah, and that's like young quarterback stuff.
Right.
Okay, I get that.
San Francisco at six. L.A. at seven. Los Angeles Rams at seven. So the Matthew Stafford love continues with him going to L.A.
And I guess is that the Trey Lance love too?
I guess so. Or the New England Patriots at number eight. The New England Patriots at number eight. At number nine,
Mac Jones, baby.
The Indianapolis Colts on this list. At number 10, Seattle. Number 11, the L.A. Chargers. At number 12, the New Orleans Saints. At number 13, the Green Bay Packers. And finally, at number 14 on this list, the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee in 14th. On this list, behind teams like the Bills and the Browns and the Chargers and the Ravens and the Colts and the Patriots in their own conference in the AFC. So let's start with this. What do you make of the Titans being at number 14 on the power rankings for the next 3 years in this projection? And what do you make of teams like the Patriots and the Colts being in front of the Titans on this list?
Well, I'm confused. I'm almost more confused than anything by two teams in the NFC when you read that. One, your Green Bay Packers.
Yep.
Like, to me, they should either be way higher or way lower, shouldn't they? Is that like hedging the bets of maybe he'll be there or
could
not?
Could be. Because, like, if Rodgers is there for the next 3 years,
they should be higher.
They should be in the top five.
If he's not, then we just talked about Jordan Love. We'll see. But I wouldn't have him top half of the league. And then the Saints, that's a vote of confidence for who?
Maybe Sean Payton.
Yeah.
That's well, all that I think of.
So that would be my – if that's the answer, then that's part of the answer with the Patriots too, right?
That's
Belichick's going to figure it out. And yeah, I mean, I think Mac Jones can be a good quarterback. I don't have a ton of confidence that, like, Cam Newton's going to have this huge turnaround season, but we'll see. But that's got to be – so some of that is that. So that's got to be
– well,
because the Colts-Titans is the obvious thing you wonder about, right?
Well, and to that point, they kind of list by category here, and they've got quarterback ranking for New England at 22. They've got coach number one.
Yeah. Because, like, with the Colts, I assume that's just largely – again, good roster, good young team, a lot of good young players, but largely a vote of confidence for – Ballard, Reich.
Right.
Because, I'm sorry, but like Carson Wentz, going to be one of the most fascinating players in the league this year, but he's not a quarterback that inspires top 10 over the next 3 years confidence. I think you're way too optimistic about Carson Wentz if you think so.
Well, and to the on the Titans part of this, I mean, the categories, again, are the quarterback, the overall roster minus the quarterback, coaching, drafting, and the front office. They're kind of right in the middle on all this. Quarterback, they're at number 11. That's the highest ranking they have. 15 for coaching, 16 for overall roster, 17 for draft, and 13 for front office. So they're kind of right there in the middle on most of these rankings, with quarterback being right outside the top 10 at number 11.
I mean, I don't think it's outrageously. I mean, look, there's just so much on the defensive side of the ball that we've talked today a lot about the Preds and the – you know, what's the vision? Where is it going? Well, a lot of it is just like A, B, C, and D need to break our way. Well, yeah. It's the same thing with the Titans defense, right?
Oh, yeah.
And some of the, you know, again, John Robinson, overall picture, very good. Recent picture with some things, you know, hasn't been good. And certainly there's a lot of gambles on injured players that keep happening and just a lot of hope invested in certain players on this defense, and if it doesn't go the right way, you could be bad on defense for the foreseeable future.
Any guesses at who the bottom three teams are on this list for the next 3 years? So the bottom three teams.
Well,
any guesses?
Well, I would hope that the Honolulu Blue and Silver would have a strong spot there, because they should always be there.
They're at number 31.
Nice.
Have any idea who number 30 and number 32 would be?
Well, I would probably assume that the Houston Texans would be one of them.
They are right at number now. 32, dead last in the NFL, the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I mean, right now, how can you be excited about what they have going on? Let's see, who else would be?
I don't know that you'll get this one.
All right, give me a chance.
Okay.
I feel like I can figure this out. The worst outlook for the next 3 years, the NFL, the Lions and the Texans
are at the bottom.
Are obvious.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that this is not an obvious.
I don't think so.
I mean, because I mean, obviously, you think about teams that have been crap, like the Jets.
Right.
You could look at the whole freaking NFC East and not be too excited. How about, let me guess, Carolina Panthers.
It is the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
At number 30.
Okay.
I don't know that I'd have them at 30, but I guess, I mean, the salary cap, probably part of that too, so I guess you put that in front office. But, yeah, number 30.
Cap stress, aging, and look, I mean, I share skepticism on Hurts. I'd love to see it work out. I don't know. I don't know if he's quite good enough.
My wife just texted me and goes, "Who are the Honolulu Blue and Silver?"
Oh, baby, restore the roar.
The mighty Detroit Lions getting it done out there.
I mean, look.
How many playoff wins since 1957?
One. It was 38-6 over Aikman, Emmett, and the Cowboys. Though it was pretty sweet. It was a great day in my young life, but one. Yeah, Honolulu Blue, that's hey, the uniforms are sweet.
Yeah.
The Honolulu Blue is sweet.
It is. That's where that stops.
Yeah, and then you got a couple great players who unfortunately had to play for the Lions.
We'll continue this conversation when we come back. What do you make of the Titans' outlook for the next 3 years? Where would you stack it up against the rest of the National Football League? We'll get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. Make sure this Wednesday you're tuning in. It's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. Our listeners are killing it in that competition so far. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Wednesday night, you win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate this Wednesday morning at 9:45. We'll be right back. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch on this beautiful morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Donovan from Wisconsin has updated us. The station in Wisconsin is 94.1 WJJO out of Madison, Wisconsin. One of their DJs has said they saw a comment from someone on the Packers Facebook page.
Oh.
That Aaron Rodgers getting that house deep cleaned. He's coming back. Not sure which one, but that's where the post is coming from.
Outstanding.
So Packers Facebook. We've talked about Predators Facebook and some things that you can find there. Packers Facebook getting to the bottom of Aaron Rodgers getting his house deep cleaned, coming back to play for the Packers.
So
Joe, your thoughts.
This is big information. So then I went to Twitter and I found 94.1 WJJO, Madison, Wisconsin. Their last tweet was April 21st. Is that bad?
Probably.
Oh, sorry. April 28th.
Okay. So
they've been disbanded.
3 months.
Yeah. They've been disbanded.
Okay.
No, maybe, I don't know. Maybe this is an old account.
Look.
I'm going to go to WJJO.com.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't their account saying it. It was their DJ has done some digging here. They've gotten to the bottom of a Facebook post.
Wouldn't you put that right on Twitter?
Yeah, I would.
If you had such a bombshell?
Absolutely.
I would think so.
That's amazing.
So it was from a Facebook post.
So now, if Aaron Rodgers comes back and he plays for the Packers, do we credit this radio station and these Facebook commenters for the scoop of getting the house deep cleaned?
Sure.
I think that's how this works, right?
Yes.
Forget it. 94.1 WJJO, even though you haven't tweeted in 3 months. This is worth a tweet, WJJO. What is there a name of the? Okay, here we go, Donovan. Is there a name of the show, Donovan? How about give me the DJ's name? How about that?
Just give us the DJ's name, and then we'll see if he put it out there on his personal page.
Yeah, if it's Facebook, yeah,
that's right.
I don't. I mean, I have an account, but you know, I don't really.
Not on there much.
No,
not a big social media guy.
Well, I mean, I'm on Twitter all the time.
Right.
That's my one.
There you go.
Facebook, yeah, can't get there.
There's
man.
A lot.
Especially in the last, you know, year-ish.
There's a lot. A lot on Facebook.
Got some uncles like, dude, shut up. My God.
I think we've all got
that. Talking about?
I think we've all got that.
How many crazy uncles on Facebook can one person have?
Several, apparently, is the answer to that question. I'm going to be joined by Chase McCabe to begin the 9 o'clock hour. He's down in Hoover, Alabama for SEC Media Days. For our SEC Media Days coverage, brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket, equipment supplier in Nashville, including gaskets, hoses, and hose fittings, seals, packing joints, gauges, fire protection, cups, belting, and more. If you need it, they've got it. Make sure you check out our friends at Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Tennessee on the microphone coming up today, I believe at 10:30 is when Josh Heupel is scheduled to speak at SEC Media Days. Obviously, the first SEC Media Days for Josh Heupel, taking over in year one as head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. Joe, as you look at this program, as you look at what Heupel is now walking into with Tennessee football, what are some of the biggest challenges that you think he faces, he and his coaching staff, to try to get this football program that has just been mired in mediocrity, and sometimes less than that, for the past decade, back to relevancy in the SEC East, in the SEC, and eventually in the national conversation when it comes to college football? What are the biggest challenges that Tennessee football as a whole and Josh Heupel now face as they head into year one under a new regime?
It's one moment in time, and it's a lot can change. A lot will change. But I would say that right now, the fact that in the 24/7 sports rankings, Tennessee is 40th in the nation and Vanderbilt is 25th is a little bit of a glimpse of what my answer would be, which is that the biggest challenge for Josh Heupel is recruiting. And I'm not even talking about getting Ty Simpson and company to come to Tennessee. I'm talking about warding off some of these programs that are now coming in here, or even if it's not in the state, elsewhere, beating you for prospects that I think in the past Tennessee would have been able to land. I mean, we're not, you know, Pruitt got some big time recruits. And even that, he did not have the talent level required. Now, you can also say coaching was a big part of them not being as competitive as they needed to be, especially offensive coaching.
Yes.
But now you will have bigger challenges that Pruitt didn't face because Pruitt left a mess that now the next guy gets to clean up. You have to recruit through the looming sanctions and all that stuff, whatever may come of that, and just the overall. I mean, the trajectory, the negativity, one coaching change after another, it just diminishes the job, makes it tougher for each person, successive person. So that's it to me is recruiting. First, starting with, can you get back to the point where Kentucky, Ole Miss, name your, you know, so-so SEC program isn't coming in here and beating you out for kids that you want?
Yeah, and that's to your point. It was going the other way in UCF. I mean, the record on the field going the other way with UCF, the recruiting going the wrong way at UCF during the end of Josh Heupel's tenure there, albeit a very short tenure and a very high bar that was there when Josh Heupel took over. So I think it's important to point those things out when you're having these conversations. Scott Frost got that program with UCF to one of the top non-Power 5 programs in the entire country. So it's important to remember that. But the fact remains that the record on the field, the recruiting rankings, were going the opposite direction under Josh Heupel. So I think before everything that you factor in with Tennessee, with, you know, the possible NCAA sanctions, how bad they've been the last couple of years, how difficult it is to recruit in the SEC with so many other programs recruiting at a high level, I think that was a concern with Josh Heupel outside of all those things. And when you factor all those things in, I think that's pretty clearly at the top of the list of challenges for Josh Heupel. On the field, I'd say it's quarterback. Like, you've got to find a way, and I think this ties directly into recruiting, you've got to find a way to make this offense exciting. And a way to make this offense exciting is it being productive. And you've got to have a quarterback that can run your system and that you can build around. And I think the mark of a good quarterback coach, and I think Dan Mullen is phenomenal at this. I think Dan Mullen is phenomenal at identifying the strengths and weaknesses of his quarterback, building game plans around those strengths and those weaknesses, and letting that be the system they run offensively. I mean, he's got his bread and butter plays, and we all know that. But I think Dan Mullen, and really to a degree Lane Kiffin, are really good at identifying the strengths of their quarterback and saying, all right, this is what we're going to do. This is what he does really well. I didn't think Jeremy Pruitt had the first clue of how to do that. That's got to be important for Josh Heupel. He's got to be able to, number one, identify who's the starter going to be, and when you do that, make sure that your system fits their skill set, because that's how you're successful in today's college football. It's the quarterback, and that's been, other than Josh Dobbs, it's been a while since Tennessee's had some quarterbacks that really and truly have been successful, especially in SEC play.
Yeah, so this first year, picking the right guy, getting that guy ready. I mean, that's the thing. You can't even in the short term, you can't go through camp and be splitting up these reps forever. I mean, you got to identify that guy, and then you need a big season out of him and a big season out of this offense. And then early on, you have something to show people, you know, and all of them are, you know, Milton, if he comes into Tennessee and it gets the job and does really well after all the hype and all the, you know, disappointment at Michigan, that says something. You know, you got the younger guys in the program who have been, you know, up and down in their opportunities. No big surprise, but if you turn one of them into a consistent quarterback, that would say something. And then Hooker, same thing. I mean, he was pretty good at Virginia Tech, but not great. So you want to get as many of them ready as possible. You want great competition, but the sooner you can have someone at that position excel, I think the sooner you help yourself in this big challenge. You know, again, because I think when you get the big quarterback recruit in your class, that quarterback recruit is one of your best recruiters. And that's, to me, that's the big hope for Heupel is I'm a quarterback whisperer. You want to come here, and you start there. That's kind of like your foundation.
I mentioned like with the quarterback specifically, when the depth chart shakes out, because we've talked to different people. Some people feel like Hendon Hooker is the leader in the clubhouse for the quarterback spot. David Ubben pretty strong in his belief that Joe Milton is going to be the guy at the end of the day. I've not heard a lot about Harrison Bailey. I know he was just at the Manning Passing Academy, and we'll see if he can take a big step from his true freshman year to his sophomore year. But I do wonder, like, if he's not the starter this year, if you're Harrison Bailey, are you looking around saying, huh, maybe I ought to hit up that transfer portal and go somewhere else? Because he's a five-star guy. He came in at the end of last year, and basically at the end of last year, the keys got turned over to him, and for better or for worse, that's who they were rolling with, at least for half the game. He got some playing time and, you know, had some moments where he looked okay, had some other moments where he looked like a true freshman. If they get all the way through this year and Harrison Bailey's not the starting quarterback, I think there's a pretty strong chance he may move on after that.
Oh, no question. I mean, it's – and that's how it goes. I mean, it's – and maybe name, image, likeness intensifies that, but it was already pretty clear. You have a quarterback in each class, and then at some point the incumbent's gone and you have a competition, and usually the loser of the competition is going to end up somewhere else. So I think a couple of these guys, I would think, would be moving on. And of course, this doesn't even include Caden Salter, who already has moved on because of his own trouble.
Hugh Freeze.
To Hugh Freeze and Liberty.
You think anybody asked Heupel today about Caden Salter and like why he came to that decision?
It's actually, that would be a good – I hope so.
Yeah.
That would be a worthwhile question because and look, I wouldn't expect Heupel to get into the weeds on that and really give details, but I still look at that and say, man, Salter must have handled the aftermath terribly.
Yeah.
On its face, what he did, I think a large, massive, strong majority of coaches would not have kicked that kid off the team for what he did. So he must have really handled it poorly after that. So if that's the case, hopefully he matures.
We'll continue the conversation on the Vols and college athletics as a whole when we come back, including a lot of money the NCAA has spent on defense in these Supreme Court cases that we've talked about for the last few weeks and months. We'll get to all that coming up next, as well as taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch on this beautiful morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Donovan from Wisconsin has updated us. The station in Wisconsin is 94.1 WJJO out of Madison, Wisconsin. One of their DJs has said they saw a comment from someone on the Packers Facebook page.
Oh.
That Aaron Rodgers getting that house deep cleaned. He's coming back. Not sure which one, but that's where the post is coming from.
Outstanding.
So Packers Facebook. We've talked about Predators Facebook and some things that you could find there. Packers Facebook getting to the bottom of Aaron Rodgers getting his house deep cleaned, coming back to play for the Packers.
So
Joe, your thoughts.
This is big information. So then I went to Twitter and I found 94.1 WJJO, Madison, Wisconsin. Their last tweet was April 21st. Is that bad?
Probably.
Oh, sorry. April 28th.
Okay. So
they've been disbanded.
3 months.
Yeah. They've been disbanded.
Okay.
No, maybe, I don't know. Maybe this is an old account.
Look.
I'm going to go to WJJO.com.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't their account saying it. It was their DJ has done some digging here. They've gotten to the bottom of a Facebook post.
Wouldn't you put that right on Twitter?
Yeah, I would.
If you had such a bombshell?
Absolutely.
I would think so.
That's amazing.
So it was from a Facebook post.
So now, if Aaron Rodgers comes back and he plays for the Packers, do we credit this radio station and these Facebook commenters for the scoop of getting the house deep cleaned?
Sure.
Like, it's how this works, right?
Yes.
Forget it. 94.1 WJJO, even though you haven't tweeted in 3 months. This is worth a tweet, WJJO. What is there a name of the... Okay, here we go, Donovan. Is there a name of the show, Donovan? How about give me the DJ's name? How about that?
Just give us the DJ's name. And then we'll see if he put it out there on his personal page.
Yeah, if it's Facebook, yeah. That's right. I don't... I mean, I have an account, but you know, I don't really.
Not on there much.
No.
Not a big social media guy.
Well, I mean, I'm on Twitter all the time.
Right.
That's my one.
There you go.
Facebook, yeah, can't get there. There's a lot. Especially in the last, you know, year-ish.
There's a lot. A lot on Facebook.
Got some uncles like, dude, shut up. My God.
I think we've all got that.
What are you talking about?
I think we've all got that.
How many crazy uncles on Facebook can one person have?
Several. Apparently is the answer to that question. I'm going to be joined by Chase McCabe to begin the 9 o'clock hour. He's down in Hoover, Alabama for SEC Media Days for our SEC Media Days coverage brought to you by Volunteer Hose and Gasket, equipment supplier in Nashville, including gaskets, hoses, and hose fittings, seals, packing joints, gauges, fire protection, cups, belting, and more. If you need it, they've got it. Make sure you check out our friends at Volunteer Hose and Gasket, Tennessee. On the microphone coming up today, I believe at 10:30 is when Josh Heupel is scheduled to speak at SEC Media Days. Obviously, the first SEC Media Days for Josh Heupel, taking over in year one as head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. Joe, as you look at this program, as you look at what Heupel is now walking into with Tennessee football, what are some of the biggest challenges that you think he faces, he and his coaching staff, to try to get this football program that has just been mired in mediocrity, and sometimes less than that, for the past decade, back to relevancy in the SEC East, in the SEC, and eventually in the national conversation when it comes to college football? What are the biggest challenges that Tennessee football as a whole and Josh Heupel now face as they head into year one under a new regime?
It's one moment in time, and it's a lot can change. A lot will change. But I would say that right now, the fact that in the 24/7 sports rankings, Tennessee is 40th in the nation and Vanderbilt is 25th is a little bit of a glimpse of what my answer would be, which is that the biggest challenge for Josh Heupel is recruiting. And I'm not even talking about getting Ty Simpson and company to come to Tennessee. I'm talking about warding off some of these programs that are now coming in here, or even if it's not in the state, elsewhere, beating you for prospects that I think in the past Tennessee would have been able to land. I mean, we're not, you know, Pruitt got some big time recruits. And even that, he did not have the talent level required. Now, you can also say coaching was a big part of them not being as competitive as they need to be, especially offensive coaching.
Yes.
But now you will have bigger challenges that Pruitt didn't face because Pruitt left a mess that now the next guy gets to clean up. You have to recruit through the looming sanctions and all that stuff, whatever may come of that, and just the overall. I mean, the trajectory, the negativity, one coaching change after another, it just diminishes the job, makes it tougher for each person, successive person. So that's it to me, is recruiting. First, starting with, can you get back to the point where Kentucky, Ole Miss, name your, you know, so-so SEC program isn't coming in here and beating you out for kids that you want?
Yeah, and that's, to your point, it was going the other way in UCF. I mean, the record on the field going the other way with UCF, the recruiting going the wrong way at UCF during the end of Josh Heupel's tenure there, albeit a very short tenure and a very high bar that was there when Josh Heupel took over. So I think it's important to point those things out when you're having these conversations. Scott Frost got that program with UCF to one of the top non-Power 5 programs in the entire country. So it's important to remember that. But the fact remains that the record on the field, the recruiting rankings, were going the opposite direction under Josh Heupel. So I think before everything that you factor in with Tennessee, with you know, the possible NCAA sanctions, how bad they've been the last couple of years, how difficult it is to recruit in the SEC with so many other programs recruiting at a high level. I think that was a concern with Josh Heupel outside of all those things. And when you factor all those things in, I think that's pretty clearly at the top of the list of challenges for Josh Heupel. On the field, I'd say it's quarterback. Like, you've got to find a way, and I think this ties directly into recruiting, you've got to find a way to make this offense exciting. And a way to make this offense exciting is it being productive. And you've got to have a quarterback that can run your system and that you can build around. And I think the mark of a good quarterback coach, and I think Dan Mullen is phenomenal at this. I think Dan Mullen is phenomenal at identifying the strengths and weaknesses of his quarterback, building game plans around those strengths and those weaknesses, and letting that be the system they run offensively. I mean, he's got his bread and butter plays, and we all know that. But I think Dan Mullen, and really to a degree Lane Kiffin, are really good at identifying the strengths of their quarterback and saying, all right, this is what we're going to do. This is what he does really well. I didn't think Jeremy Pruitt had the first clue of how to do that. That's got to be important for Josh Heupel. He's got to be able to, number one, identify who's the starter going to be, and when you do that, make sure that your system fits their skill set, because that's how you're successful in today's college football. It's the quarterback, and that's been, other than Josh Dobbs, it's been a while since Tennessee's had some quarterbacks that really and truly have been successful, especially in SEC play.
Yeah, so this first year, picking the right guy, getting that guy ready. I mean, that's the thing. You can't even in the short term, you can't go through camp and be splitting up these reps forever. I mean, you got to identify that guy, and then you need a big season out of him and a big season out of this offense. And then early on, you have something to show people, you know, and all of them are, you know, Milton, if he comes into Tennessee and it gets the job and does really well after all the hype and all the, you know, disappointment at Michigan, that says something. You know, you get the younger guys in the program who have been, you know, up and down in their opportunities. No big surprise, but if you turn one of them into a consistent quarterback, that would say something. And then Hooker, same thing. I mean, he was pretty good at Virginia Tech, but not great. So you want to get as many of them ready as possible. You want great competition. But the sooner you can have someone at that position excel, I think the sooner you help yourself in this big challenge. You know, again, because I think when you get the big quarterback recruit in your class, that quarterback recruit is one of your best recruiters. And that's, to me, that's the big hope for Heupel is – I'm a quarterback whisperer. You want to come here, and you start there. That's kind of like your foundation.
I'm interested, like with the quarterback specifically, when the depth chart shakes out. Because we've talked to different people. Some people feel like Hendon Hooker is the leader in the clubhouse for the quarterback spot. David Ubben pretty strong in his belief that Joe Milton is going to be the guy at the end of the day. I've not heard a lot about Harrison Bailey. I know he was just at the Manning Passing Academy. And we'll see if he can take a big step from his true freshman year to his sophomore year. But I do wonder, like, if he's not the starter this year, if you're Harrison Bailey, are you looking around saying, huh, maybe I ought to hit up that transfer portal and go somewhere else? Because he's a five-star guy. He came in at the end of last year, and basically at the end of last year, the keys got turned over to him. And for better or for worse, that's who they were rolling with, at least for half the game. He got some playing time and, you know, had some moments where he looked okay, had some other moments where he looked like a true freshman. If they get all the way through this year and Harrison Bailey's not the starting quarterback, I think there's a pretty strong chance he may move on after that.
Oh, no question. I mean, it's – and that's how it goes. I mean, it's – and maybe name, image, likeness intensifies that, but it was already pretty clear. You have a quarterback in each class, and then at some point the incumbent's gone and you have a competition, and usually the loser of the competition is going to end up somewhere else. So I think a couple of these guys, I would think, would be moving on. And, of course, this doesn't even include Caden Salter, who already has moved on because of his own trouble.
Hugh Freeze.
To Hugh Freeze and Liberty.
You think anybody asked Heupel today about Caden Salter and, like, why he came to that decision?
It's actually, that would be a good – I hope so.
Yeah.
That would be a worthwhile question because and look, I wouldn't expect Heupel to get into the weeds on that and really give details, but – I still look at that and say, man, Salter must have handled the aftermath terribly.
Yeah.
On its face, what he did, I think a large, massive, strong majority of coaches would not have kicked that kid off the team for what he did. So he must have really handled it poorly after that. So if that's the case, hopefully he matures.
We'll continue the conversation on the Vols and college athletics as a whole when we come back, including a lot of money the NCAA has spent on defense in these Supreme Court cases that we've talked about for the last few weeks and months. We'll get to all that coming up next, as well as taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nashville SC fans, join ESPN 94.9 this Monday, July the 26th from 7 to 8 p.m. for NSC Backstage, featuring Nashville SC players and coaches. Watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and at thegamenashville.com. NSC Backstage, brought to you by Camarena Tequila, the official tequila of Nashville SC. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And Joe, Greg Sankey was speaking yesterday at SEC Media Days, and again, we'll have Chase McCabe coming up live from SEC Media Days to begin the top of the next hour at 9 o'clock, and talked about all the different challenges that the conference went through last year in dealing with COVID and the pandemic and everything that went along with that, and some tax documents have come out from the NCAA that shows that the NCAA was hit pretty hard by the pandemic, also by some legal fees as well. The NCAA spent nearly $68 million on legal services during the 2019-20 fiscal year, as it lost hundreds of million dollars in revenue. I believe they lost more than 50% of their revenue this past season. A lot of that had to do with not having March Madness, and I believe the loss for that from media rights alone was $702 million of not having the March Madness tournament take place last year. So when you dig through this, when it, you know, the losses, the defense fees, all these different things, there was a lot of money lost last year by the NCAA, and $2.8 million of that went to Mark Emmert. Good time to be him.
2-9.
2-9, yeah. Excuse me.
So Dan Murphy from ESPN, I think he's the only one who had this story yesterday, got the docs. So it's interesting. You lose more than 50% of your revenue, but Mark Emmert gets a slight raise. Donald Remy, who is COO, a cool 1-7. Executive VP Stan Wilcox, 1-3. A lot of NCAA employees, more than 500K, and about $34 million of that money was spent on the NCAA versus Alston case that got to the Supreme Court and turned out to be a complete dunking.
And they just got torched.
In a society where we can't agree on what color the sky is based on your political party, the entire world agrees that the NCAA is a load of crap.
It truly was amazing.
Pretty astounding stuff. So you spent $34 million to take that facial, you know? Just to take that complete societal dunking on your head, and then paid everybody the same, and it's pretty amazing. So, I mean, this is a nice little reminder for everybody that one, that, you know, Emmert is—he's
got a great job, man.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, if there's a lot of complaining about why Mark Emmert keeps this job and everything, he gets paid a lot of money, but who the hell wants this job right
now? Nobody.
Because I tell you what. And this came up on Twitter yesterday a little bit from people who, you know, were in Hoover, and I would agree. I mean, you know, Greg Sankey has been pretty impressive as the SEC commissioner.
Yep.
And now, in fact, I've argued directly with Greg Sankey about name, image, likeness, and I did not like his viewpoint on that. But the bottom line is, you know, everybody in that on that side of the table was trying to fight against all this. But he still understands and is able to be nimble and adjust to things that are happening. I thought he had a really strong address yesterday. Not sure, you know, the Bob Dylan stuff was necessary, but whatever. You know, times are a changing. And I will say that, man, Greg Sankey in that job would be a lot better choice than Mark Emmert. Now, Sankey also, as Emmert did last week, you know, Sankey basically came out and talked about the NCAA. You know, here's a quote from Sankey. Quote, "We're not going to solve every problem and be able to legislate college athletics programs through the NCAA manual. We can cover some aspects, but 450 pages seems less relevant today than it ever has before," end quote. So, I mean, being the president of the NCAA, it won't maybe not mean the same thing, although you can probably still get paid a lot of money for not great results.
Yep.
But he would be a much better leader and someone I think a lot of people would have a lot more confidence in moving forward to whatever the NCAA is going to become. It's not going to go away. As people, some people are saying, it's the collective of the schools, the organizations. I mean, somebody's got to, like, draw up the tournament bracket and stuff, you know, distribute cash to everybody. But
remodeled.
Yeah, yeah. What's the word for depowerified? Depowerified.
It is. We'll go with that.
Yeah. That's a new word I just made up. It's losing a lot of power moving forward, and everyone is acknowledging that. But this story on Emmert and everything, it's just an amazing glimpse into just how incompetent they have been.
Oh, and speaking of Greg Sankey, he spoke yesterday to kick off SEC Media Days down in Hoover, Alabama. And one of the many topics that he got into was COVID-19 and trying to manage that as they move forward, hopefully closer to normal this year in college football in the SEC. And there is a target for each team for 80% in terms of vaccination rates. And according to Greg Sankey, 6 of the 14 teams in the SEC have reached the 80% mark for vaccinations. And Sankey saying, quote, "That number needs to grow and grow rapidly. We have learned how to manage through a COVID environment, but we do not yet have control of a COVID environment." So Greg Sankey calling pretty publicly yesterday for teams to crank it up a notch in terms of their vaccination requirements. And also, basically, without saying it directly, basically said, as Bob Bowlesby did in the Big 12 as well, yeah, if you run into any problems this year with COVID-19, there's probably a pretty good chance you're going to have to forfeit some games, which I don't think that's a big surprise. I think if that happens this year, we absolutely could see some teams forfeit some games, which is not what anybody wants to see. I think in college football, that's much more likely than it would be in the NFL.
It's not what anybody wants to see. Not, you know, the interesting thing about that, of course, is, and the NCAA, the SEC last year, you think about all they did to get those games in. I mean, let's remember, I mean, each of these games is a piece of television inventory.
Yep.
Not to mention, now this year, it's also, you're back to, it's a huge event in your town. It's a huge event in the college town of record at that point. It's a big deal with the attendance, the revenue from that. So if you're just getting rid of these things, you know, that's significant. So it's one of those things where if it got too extensive, I could also see maybe a little bit of rethinking on that. But obviously the idea right now is to pressure people, right?
Well, I think it's a little different, though, too, this year, right? Because you had last year with the conference-only schedule, there were multiple bye weeks. So you had – I mean, there's multiple bye weeks anyway, but there were some teams last year that had 2 weeks off at one point. Like,
right.
That's not going to happen this year. You've got a non-conference schedule back in play. You know, the college football playoff is what it is. You've got the conference tournament or the conference championship schedule. Like, there's not a ton of room to move around this year in the college football schedule. So I think it would be a little bit more challenging to do that this year and to move everything else around, would be my guess.
No doubt. No question. No. And, I mean, look, this is a coordinated public pressure effort. Bowlesby, Sankey, everybody, and frankly, the coaches should all cut commercials. It's a very different type of deal. Now we actually have a way to fight this, and some people are choosing not to. But if you get to that threshold and you don't have to deal with the testing, that's what everybody wants. 6 of the 14. Honestly, I would say, I mean, I could have seen it being worse than that. I could have seen it being lower. Yep. The fact that they're just about half of the league right now, it's not terrible. It's not
and
great.
As we know, Vanderbilt is one of those.
Vanderbilt will be 100. They will be 100% vaccination because Vanderbilt students have to be. I mean, I'm assuming, like in the Big Ten, that'll probably be the thing for Northwestern too, the private university in the Big Ten. Indiana University has had it upheld to in a court that they can mandate vaccinations from students. I don't know how much we're going to see that around the SEC, but look, man, the bottom line is look at everything that's going on in the world. Not like basically every single person hospitalized in California with this stuff is not vaccinated. It won't protect you from testing positive, but it will actually protect you. That's the point. And then, you know, the virus doesn't mutate, et cetera, et cetera. We all live happily ever after.
That's the plan.
There you go.
That's what we're searching for here.
That's simple.
When we come back, we will head down to Hoover, Alabama, our own Chase McCabe from Darren Donovan. Chase is down live at SEC Media Days. We'll catch up with him. Look ahead to Tennessee today. I believe Vanderbilt tomorrow at SEC Media Days as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.